And joining us
is Ted Short, and he's updating my information sheet. I've got the
information. Oh, you now have information, Baker?
Yeah, I have information for an SB2C-4, and he's telling me the one they fly is a -5. There are some differences.
Yeah, there's a 5 instead of a 4. Maybe the -5 has more cup holders?
The airplane is probably a little heavier and has a little more capability to it.
Right, it has cup holders.
So, good morning, Ted.
Good morning.
What did I miss on the Helldiver?
Well, like I said, it's a -5, and the maximum takeoff weight in combat off a carrier was 19,000 pounds.
That's a lot of weight.
It's a lot of weight. And sitting there right now, where we're sitting, and we're about 14,500, so it's quite a bit of difference in weight. They made it a little bit heavier.
And this airplane is the only flying Helldiver in the world.
That is correct. And there's 5 others we know of. One's in a museum in Thailand. One's in Greece. Smithsonian has one. And the Navy just got that one. They pulled out of California, out of the lake, and it'll be at Pensacola.
Right, but that's going to be restored static only.
Static. All of these will just probably never fly again. So there's a couple other projects. It's been in the works for several years, but one's in California, and Fagan has got the P-38 here. He's starting to restore his. So
why? I mean, that's obviously a very, very rare airplane. How did you guys come across one that you figured you could make flyable?
Well, we had the one we have. We had a colonel that was out in California in the 70-71 time frame, and there was a museum in Santa Monica that had these, the SBD and the Helldiver out there, and he purchased them and then donated them to the Commemorative Air Force.
So wow. So they did some time as static displays in museums already.
The Helldiver was decommissioned in 1948 at Corpus Christi, Texas. They sold it to a mechanic shop up in Montana that was training mechanics on it. And then the guy in the museum bought it from them, and then when he went bankrupt, we acquired the aircraft.
What kind of shape was it in when you got it?
Museum shape.
It looked good on the outside.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you had a lot of work to do on the aircraft to get it flyable again.
That's correct. And then they flew it for in air shows for several years until 1981, when it crashed at an air show in Harlingen and broke it in 3 pieces. The engine came off, went under the wings, and took the tail off.
Wow.
They said it would never fly again, and our wing took it over as a project. And it took us about 6 years to get it back in the air, and a couple dollars and a lot of labor.
Yeah, a couple dollars and some Band-Aids.
I was going to say, parts for rebuilding a Helldiver, you probably had to fabricate everything you needed to put it back together again.
It's reverse engineering. You hope you have enough left to make a pattern out of it.
Yeah, exactly.
One without the rip.
Yeah.
Preferably,
yes, sir. Yeah.
What are the hardest parts on this airplane to get a hold of?
Pilots.
That's easy.
No, we have a lot of pilots. A lot of people want to fly our aircraft, but we're kind of choosy.
Yeah.
We're very picky about who we're allowed to get in it and fly it.
Well, that is a very rare, one-of-a-kind aircraft. You definitely want to have the best of the best in that.
That is correct.
But, you know, being as how it is a rare aircraft, and according to my somewhat faulty information here, there were 7,140 of them built. That's not a lot, of you know, considering the production run of other aircraft.
That is, we consider it an awful lot when you only come down, you have one left, and there's, you know,
right,
just only 5 in museums or projects out there, so. But a lot of them, like you've heard before, they needed room on the ships for bring all the men back. So they just pushed all the aircraft in, and those on islands, they kind of dug a trench and bulldozed them in and crushed them down. And also, that was the war to end all wars, so they needed irons and cars and toasters, more important things than war machines.
And a lot of those precious aircraft just got scrapped.
Yeah, brings tears to your eyes when you think about it.
Oh, absolutely. You can't help but cry when you see Paul Mance do that crash landing with the B-17 in 12 o'clock high. People now, they cringe when they see that.
Well, who knows? Maybe that airplane was repaired later.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows?
Well, Hollywood can do a lot of strange things with
Well, now films,
now, especially now with it.
Yeah, with computers.
Yeah, you can take an airplane or a vehicle that never existed, and bang, there it is. Mm. Or build a whole fleet of them. They could, you know, it's amazing.
I just want them to push the print button and actually print the airplane.
Yeah, they could do that.
That's what we need to work on here.
You've led a sheltered life, haven't you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
We have a good imagination,
right,
too.
No, I spent too much time with computers.
So now I understand that the Commemorative Air Force offers a lot of rides in aircraft. Are you giving rides
yes,
in the
Yes, we're
Hell
selling
Diver?
Rides in the Hell Diver in order to help maintain it and raise funds to keep it flying, because it's a great educational tool. And as we travel across the country, we meet a lot of pilots, and mostly rear seat gunners, and we do pilots, and it's sometimes it gets very emotional.
Oh, I can imagine.
Yeah. Especially if they haven't seen one in 60 years.
And that's what the majority of them say. They've never seen one since they got out of the service.
Right.
You have had to have heard some amazing stories.
We have that. When they first deployed them, the Navy ordered it in 1939. They wanted it to replace the SBD Dauntless. And they had a lot of things they wanted done that had never been done before. And it was 1943 before they got it operational at Rabaul. And it's one of the major things was they wanted to be able to put two of them on an elevator on a carrier with 2 foot of spacing around them. And before everything they had, they just put one on it. So it was very big and challenging.
They like to do that to the engineers.
They do that. There have been a lot of engineers that have wound up scratching their heads. Look at the Corsair, for crying out loud. That was definitely a head scratcher on that airplane.
One thing amazing, if you look at our folding wings and you look at our aircraft and some of the way it's built, and you think this is 1939 technology, and it's right today, you wonder how would they come up with ideas like that. Same thing for the Corsair. They bent the wings to get the prop clearance.
Mm-hmm. I guess they had a lot of people that were really good at independent creative thought.
Well, they had to be back then. They didn't have computers. They did this stuff with pencil, paper, and a slide ruler.
And that's another amazing thing. If you think about it, when they're flying these off aircraft carriers, that's your landing field. When you leave it, it ain't there when you come back.
That's right.
It's someplace else moving, so you got to be able to plot it where they're supposed to be. And if they get attacked, they ain't where they were going to be originally when you left. So.
Right, right.
Must have made life very interesting for an SB-2C pilot to be buzzing out there and come back to where the ship is and, look, Mom, it's not there.
I'm sure he knows it's not there well before he comes back.
It has to be one of those a panic moment for sure.
Well, especially after you plot it and you go to the spot it's supposed to be and it's not there. That's when it gets very exciting.
Exactly.
Interesting.
What's it like to fly the Hell Diver?
It's a very docile, really, I would say, aircraft. For as big as it is, it flies it's very light on the controls because it's all fabric on the actual controls of the aircraft, even with its weight. And with the landing gear they have on it, when you land, sometimes you don't even know you're on the runway. When you take off, the gears drop about 18 inches as opposed to most of the others. So when you land, you just slowly sit down on them. And if the pilot makes a good landing, it's like you don't even know you're on the ground.
You're not sure you want to chop the throttle just yet?
Yeah. Well, the one thing is, though, on a carrier, which this aircraft was based on carriers, it's got a rugged undercarriage, too.
You would have to see it to believe it. The spar, when they come in, the spar comes in on the wings. Instead of going straight through the fuselage, it's got to come up and over and make room for the bomb bay. And you look inside the cockpit, and you look at the spar, and you think it'd come off a railroad bridge.
I've heard that.
Huge amount of, and if you look at the landing gear, how sturdy and how big they are, and it's amazing. That's where the weight comes from. They built it to be real sturdy.
Well, it has to be. One of the problems with the Japanese Zero, I talked to Steve Barber the other day, said the thing is so light you can't help but crack parts on the thing all the time. Mm-hmm. Said it's a real maintenance headache at times. But the Curtiss airplane, there have been a lot of derogatory comments about it. The listing of nicknames for this thing, which I don't have with me, has been incredible. Did it ever really surpass the Dauntless?
They actually, the Hell Divers, sunk more tonnage during the war in the Pacific than any other aircraft. But the biggest problem came when the initial deployment of them, they were underpowered. They only had, I think, 1,700 horsepower and a three-bladed prop. They loaded them up, they'd get off the carrier, and they'd go in the water. And unless they had a big run, a good time, you know, enough time to get up, gather speed. I met one pilot that he said he was the first one to take one off a carrier when they deployed him, and the first one in the water.
Oh, wow. Short flight.
Right. But after they come out with the Dash 4, and they increase the horsepower on them, and then they become a very big machine. And one of the other reasons for a bad name was like the Dauntless landed, say, about 70 knots was their landing speed on a carrier. Well, the Helldiver was 90 and up, so you've got a lot bigger aircraft at a higher rate of speed trying to land on a carrier, and that's why they didn't like it, because it's...
Yeah, that runway looked awfully small.
And now you're coming at it a lot faster.
It's like coming from a Piper to a jet. So.
Yeah.
That had to have caused concern for quite a few pilots on that. The airplane had to have been pretty rugged in combat, too.
It was. Everyone we've talked to, they had a lot of holes punching into them, but they always got home with it. And eventually, they learned to love it. If you got some of the old SB2C pilots, they really love the aircraft.
It brought them home, like you said.
It did that.
Going back to the rides, try it again, Eddie. How many crew members does this airplane carry?
There's two. There's a pilot and the rear seater, which we call a gib, guy in back. And it's his job actually in the back, he was a radio operator and, if needed, the gunner. So.
And that's the seat that people get to fly in now.
That is correct.
But they don't have to shoot anything.
No.
But they want to. We got the machine guns in there, and they all just—they're rat-a-tatting everything they see.
Yep. So. And you're just laughing up front.
Yeah. Most everybody that we've taken for rides in it, we take their picture as soon as they land, and the plane stops, and get their comment, the first comment out of the mouth, and it's amazing. We had one in Reading. He got out of the airplane, stood up in the airplane, started hollering at the crowd. Went walking toward the crowd saying, "You got to do this, you got to do this, it's greatest." So,
it's, yeah, I guess. There's your advertisement.
Yeah. There you go.
All right, well, I want to thank you for joining us, Ted. And we can find you up where, with Warbird Alley?
Yeah, we're at Warbird Alley. I just looked down there to see they got us moved back this morning. So.
All right.
There you go.
Hopefully, we'll see you fly later today.
Thank you.
All right. Yeah. This is Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie.
And this is EAA Radio.